In 2013, OSHA published a memorandum interpreting a statutory provision of the Occupational Safety and Health Act that opined that a compliance officer could bring in third parties on an inspection, a physical inspection of a work site, if there was some benefit derived from that third party's presence. That memorandum, it was referred to by its author, Richard Fairfax, it was referred to as the Fairfax Memorandum, was the subject of a legal challenge. And the court that visited that challenge stated that the agency had essentially promulgated what had all of the features of a rule, yet had not gone through proper rulemaking, through notice and comment rulemaking. The agency went back to rulemaking, and that was in 2017 when the legal challenge was raised. So the agency went back to rulemaking, and on April 1 of this year, April 1, 2024, the Occupational Safety and Health Administration published a new rule essentially embodying the main idea behind the Fairfax memo. And the following week, on April 8th, OSHA published its frequently asked questions, interpretive guidance on its new rule. This may be only the middle chapter of a long story suggesting that we may not have the final legal outcome as to the bona fides of this new occupational safety and health rule. In the meantime, however, it will be of significant impact at workplaces all across the United States. I'm Manish Rath, and this is the OSHA 3030. So welcome, everyone, to the OSHA 3030. I'm Manish Rath. I'm an attorney at the law firm Keller & Heckman, and I've been engaged in assisting management teams across the United States in almost every state, federal plans and state plan states, Fortune 500 companies all the way to small employers in the field of occupational safety and health law for almost all of my 30 years of practice. And I'm very fortunate. So I'm joined by Taylor Johnson, my colleague at Keller & Heckman. Taylor, how are you?
Manish, I'm great. Thanks for having me, as always.
Well, this is an important topic, and I wouldn't want to do it with anyone else than to cover this topic with you. So why don't we go ahead and get started? And Taylor, I think the first thing we ought to do is give an overview. We've given a little bit of a history of how we got here. We'll give a little overview of the walk-around rule.
Yeah, that's exactly how we'll start. The walk-around rule, what is it? We'll start with the statutory provision. We'll get into the actual regulation. What changed in terms of the proposed rule versus the final rule? And just kind of break that down for everyone. Then we'll get into, you know, a lot of talk about union representatives here with this rule. So this idea of union representatives being permitted on a non-unionized worksite to accompany an OSHA inspector. So we'll get into that issue.
Really comes from the regulatory provision that a third party authorized representative should be able to accompany a compliance officer. So we should also talk about when is a third party representative authorized, and it only covers instances where they are reasonably necessary. So we'll talk about what that means as well.
Right. And then denying this third-party representative access to your work site. So when is that permissible? When will they not be allowed to come on site? We'll get into that as well.
Finally, we'll talk about what employers should do, the way we always wrap up every episode of the OSHA 3030. And that's the practical takeaway items that you can bring back to your workplace and implement in the light of this really significant legal development. This is pre-recorded. Today is Monday, April 22nd, and we're pre-recording for the April 24, 2024 webinar, and we will rebroadcast this, of course, as a podcast, as we always do. So with that said, let's get into it. I think that before we do, I should point out that we've been storing all of these episodes for the past 10 years worth of episodes on our website, khlaw.com. And this topic in particular has had a long arc of a storyline that goes back to 2013, as I said. So there's been several episodes that we've covered the walk-around rule.
That's
over that time, and they're all on our website, Taylor, at khlaw.com/OSHA3030. So the new regulation interpreting the statutory provision for the walk-around rule. Should we start with the statute?
Yeah, I think that's a great idea. So Section 8E of the OSHA Act grants a representative authorized by employees. So that's sort of the key term here, the opportunity to accompany an OSHA inspector during an inspection of the workplace. And then to the other key term is for the purpose of aiding the inspection. So that's sort of the impetus here, the statutory provision upon which, you know, the regulations.
So the first clause of 8E says that under the Act, a compliance officer will have the right to have accompany him or her on an inspection, a physical inspection of a workplace, a representative that was authorized by the employee for the purpose of aiding the inspection. So those are, as Taylor, as you point out, the two provisos that have to be met.
Yep.
That the employee has to, the representative has to be authorized by the employees, and the purpose for their presence during physical inspection has to be for the purpose of aiding the inspection.
That's right.
Okay. The second part of the rule allows that where there is no authorized employee representative, then the compliance officer may consult with a reasonable number of employees concerning safety and health matters. And that's something that's always been a understood part of physical inspections, is that the compliance officer may interview employees. So the first of these two provisions is where this new regulation centers. It's the question of whether or not a representative who's authorized by the employees could accompany a compliance officer for the purpose of aiding in the inspection. So that's the statute. And it's a well-accepted principle of law that an agency may only promulgate a regulation through proper notice and comment rulemaking if it is interpretive of that statute and doesn't go outside of the bounds of that statute. And OSHA engaged in rulemaking, the notice and comment process. I think that they're really required to take serious consideration of the comments, and that's an open question here, but they published, after going through that exercise, the final rule on April 1, and that was a rule that they purport interprets that statutory provision that we just talked about.
That's right. And then on April 8th, they released a frequently asked questions. So a lot of detail in there, actually, you know, in terms of what this rule is going to mean, kind of getting OSHA's take on some of the comments that were filed. But the upshot is that employees have the right to designate, like we said, a non-employee third-party representative, potentially more than one, too, which we'll get into later. But I thought that was an interesting takeaway as well. And then this rule will take effect on May 31st, 2024, 60 days from publication.
Yeah, so that's not a lot of time. But in that 60 days, employers have to figure out for themselves how they are going to anticipate the possibility that at their establishments, there may be an OSHA physical inspection. And if so, the possibility that the compliance officer may bring on a third party that they claim to be an authorized representative who's there for the purpose of aiding the inspection.
And so we've covered the proposed rule on like Manish mentioned, on prior episodes. So we want to just get into just two quick changes, looking at the proposed rule versus the final rule. So the first was that in the proposed rule, it sort of said that the third-party representative would participate in the inspection. That was changed to accompaniment.
And that goes actually back to the original
interpretation
where the idea that the third party can accompany a compliance officer, but participation is so open-ended that it potentially includes activity that's disruptive.
That's right. And then the second was communication skills. So communication skills was added in the regulation to the list of skills that would justify a third party to accompany the inspector. And then in the FAQ, Manish, OSHA does sort of give some more guidance on what they mean by communication skills.
Yeah, Taylor, they talked about interpretation skills in the case where workplaces were predominated by employees with limited or zero English proficiency, and that would enable the compliance officer to be able to communicate effectively with employees. And the compliance officer does have the right to interview employees after all. So if there's a language barrier and a third party may facilitate in translation, OSHA has set aside in this new rule that communication skills would be considered within the scope of the original statutory authority it was granted under Section 80. Okay, so that's communication skills. Let's talk about the old rule and what this new rule, as it was recently promulgated, says and how they're different. Well, the old rule, Taylor, says that the representative who's authorized by the employees shall be an employee of the employer. However, if in the judgment of the compliance officer, good cause can be shown as to why an accompaniment by a third party who's not an employee of the employer is reasonably necessary, and they give a parenthetical example, such as an industrial hygienist or safety engineer, and that third party, non-employee of the employer, is reasonably necessary to conduct an effective and thorough inspection in the physical inspection stage of an OSHA inspection, then that person may accompany the compliance officer during the physical inspection. That's the old rule.
That's the old rule. The new rule, so that shall goes to a may. So now the representative may be an employee of the employer or a third party.
And arguably that could be something that was found in the old rule, just phrased differently, because it says it shall be an employee of the employer, or if not, then there has to be good cause shown as to reasonable necessity.
Right. Now that's fair. I think the real action here is the examples that they give in the old rule of an industrial hygienist or a safety engineer have now been replaced with the sort of menu of skills, you know, relevant knowledge, experience with the hazards, you know, communication skills, like we just mentioned. So sort of opening up the box of who this third party representative could be, you're no longer, you know, confined to these two titles. It's this sort of just, you know, litany of different skills.
Yeah. Anyone with relevant knowledge, skills, or experience with hazardous conditions in the workplace or similar workplaces, or language or communication skills. Those are, I think, examples. Again, they're not meant to be an exhaustive list.
Sure, right.
Okay, so when you talk about third parties, the question that was raised in a number of comments was, does this include union representatives? Perhaps even if the workplace itself is non-unionized. And this theoretically could include a workplace that has a history of putting up to a vote the possibility of unionization, and that the employees have affirmatively rejected the idea of having an authorized representative.
That's a great point.
And that is problematic. One U.S. representative, Virginia Fox, filed a comment raising a concern that this new proposed rule at the time, it was proposed, could lead to the improper influence by a union or its union officials in the course of a physical inspection in the unionization process, and thereby Representative Fox raised the concern that this rule could allow unions to weaponize the rule against employers.
Sorry, Virginia Fox, chair of the Workforce and Education Committee, Monish, which I believe you've spoken before that committee before.
I've been asked to testify as an OSHA expert a number of times before Representative Fox. She's very involved in the field of workplace safety. I think her concerns are well raised, and OSHA's response to those concerns raised by Representative Fox, and all of this is in the rulemaking record,
yes,
her comments as well as their response, is that the union wouldn't be allowed to hand out union authorization cards. They would not be allowed to engage in organizational activity of any kind, political activity. OSHA recognized that that would qualify as misconduct, but it said, well, we think that kind of misconduct is unlikely. So the risk, the hazard raised in these comments that, hey, this could happen if you allow a union representative onto the worksite during a physical inspection, even when the workplace is non-unionized or maybe even affirmatively voted against union, there's an opportunity for mischief in the moment on the scene during physical inspection. OSHA simply responded in its final rule preamble, we think that's unlikely during a walk.
Unlikely. And then to kind of sum it up,
But if I could, Taylor, yeah. I'd point out that all of our safety rules and all of our health rules aren't based on likelihood.
Sure.
They're based on the possibility that some unacceptable outcome could ensue if the rule isn't followed. And so for us to be trifling with the National Labor Relations Act's intention based on likelihood, I think goes beyond the scope of OSHA's authority to weigh and balance.
Completely agree. And so to sum it up, what OSHA says is that any third-party walk-around representative, so, you know, union officials included, are subject to the good cause and reasonably necessary requirement. You know, are they aiding in the inspection? It's this test that OSHA would apply to any third-party representative is I guess, how they ultimately answer the question.
So how does OSHA or the employees designate a representative as, quote-unquote, an authorized representative? I think that's something that, unfortunately, the outcome of this rule is that the compliance officer is hereafter going to always be challenged to properly justify and will always be challenged in their determination. So I think that's going to be a problematic area of law for the agency, is whether or not the representative who accompanied the compliance officer on the walk around the physical inspection qualified as authorized.
That's a great point. So they do give, you know, in terms of the mechanics of this, OSHA does list in the FAQ these sort of four instances where this could, you know, potentially happen. You know, upon receiving a complaint during the opening conference, during the walk around, or even during employee interviews, it's all sort of times in the process where an employee can inform OSHA that they would like a walk around or have a walk around representative.
Right. So how does that work, Taylor, in real practical experience?
Right. I mean, and this is something that we were talking about just earlier, is how does this actually happen? You know, does the Sure, if it's a complaint, I could see that the COSHA would know who this is. They could have vetted this person. But if it comes out during an interview, for example, hang on, wait a minute, I'd like to have my employee representative here. How does this really work? Are we stopping the interview? Is the COSHA going to a sidebar now to ask this litany of questions of this unidentified until now representative? I think it just throws up a number of questions in terms of how this is going to play out in the field.
Sure. Is the compliance officer handling this by phone with the third party
right.
to qualify them as reasonably necessary?
Right.
The skills that they bring are actually necessary.
Yep.
First of all, and second of all, whether or not that third party is authorized by the employees. How is that going to happen, and what record is there going to be of the determinative steps taken by the compliance officer?
Exactly. That's another great point. So if you thought that this was going to be a majority vote, which I was thinking it may be something like that, I was wrong. There's no set number of employees required to authorize this representative. So if you have a workplace with more than one employee, you just need two. Two employees need to identify this authorized representative. Yeah, two or more. And then they become someone who the compliance, safety, and health officer needs to work with on the inspection. And then there could be more than one, was something I was also surprised to find out. So you could have sort of alternating factions within a worksite. They each want their own representative. So you can imagine this sort of train of people almost following the COSHA during these inspections.
One of the concerns I have with that, Taylor, is that when you go back to the founding debates in Congress before the enactment of the National Labor Relations Act, in the 1930s, one of the purposes, was that there was a history of disruption and sometimes even violence when a union tried to organize at a workplace and another union was competing to organize the same workplace. So the congressional intent, in part, was to eliminate needless disruption, social discord, violence sometimes, when two unions were competing with each other to try and control the workforce at a particular establishment. And so Congress said, we're going to harmonize the process by which employee representation is ascertained. And there is a card check, there's an election, et cetera. And then that union, if they win the election, can engage in negotiations for a collective bargaining agreement. That whole process requires that you recognize the underlying purpose, which is that two unions competing with each other and engaging in sometimes increasingly disruptive and sometimes violent activity is not beneficial to the employees, nor, by the way, to the unions in general, or to employers, or to commerce, and to the peaceable fabric of society. So the underlying purposes of the National Labor Relations Act are being upset here unilaterally by OSHA when they say that any two or more employees can designate a representative as their authorized representative. And that, as you said just now, there may be a different group of employees who have a different representative that they would like to be their authorized representative. So now you can have multiple representatives accompanying a compliance officer. You could have a different segment of an inspection where an authorized representative is authorized for it, and then a second or a subsequent section of a physical inspection would take place, and different third parties would come on board, people coming and going. And all of this is disruptive or upsetting to the underlying intent of the National Labor Relations Act, which is to sort of codify the process by which we understand who the employees have actually designated as the representative through a fair and secret ballot election process. Without that secret ballot election process, we simply don't know whether or not that third party claiming to represent the employees is indeed the chosen voice of those employees, or rather merely an usurper.
Spot on.
So that's a real problem. And I think that, frankly, needs to be tested in the courts, because the National Labor Relations Act is now about 90 years old. It has been a well-established sort of guidebook by which employees and management and unions have governed themselves. And there is a dispute process that has interpreted that law for 90 years. And now OSHA has unilaterally upset that by saying any two employees can designate themselves their own third-party authorized representative. And so that's really a disruptor in the 90-year-old field of labor law. So that's one issue. Let's go to the next one, which is, now remember, not only does that third party need to be the authorized representative, but that authorized representative has to be reasonably necessary to the prosecution of a physical inspection in order to qualify to gain admittance to accompany the inspector. That's the rule, even under the new rule.
That's right. So in the FAQ, OSHA does offer a little bit more light. It shines a little more light on what this, you know, reasonably necessary requirement is. But still, I think it's going to be a test that's very difficult to apply in the field. It's whether or not this representative will make a positive contribution to a thorough and effective inspection.
That's OSHA's words. And so what they're saying is anybody is reasonably necessary if their contribution is positive rather than negative.
Exactly.
But I think that that completely offends our commonly understood use of the word necessary. Necessary is necessary, and somebody might make a positive contribution, but it might be superfluous, it might be unnecessary, it might be a redundancy, but nevertheless positive. And so to say, well, what's reasonably necessary? Well, anything that's positive, any contribution is positive,
yeah.
I think violates our commonly accepted understanding of the word necessary. And I think that renders the rule subject to the possibility of legal challenge as well. So let's talk about what OSHA has said on this subject. They've said that if a compliance officer, remember just the compliance officer, unilaterally determines that this third party is reasonably necessary after an inquiry of that third party's skills or knowledge or experience, then they may make the determination that this person is not only authorized by the employees, but also reasonably necessary. Questions about the representative may go to that representative's familiarity with the equipment, with the processes at the establishment.
Familiar with the industry. Yeah, familiar with the hazards that are present in this particular workplace.
Might be an expert in certain consensus standards that are applicable. And so that those are the kinds of questions that OSHA envisions a compliance officer asking a third party. Where's the record? What proof does the compliance officer have to establish to show that they conducted a proper inquiry?
That's a great question.
I think that that would be a reasonable step for a compliance officer to take to assure themselves that their own determination is later defensible.
Yeah.
But I don't see it as being expressly written. I might have missed it. But
no, I don't think you did.
Okay. Yeah, that would be a helpful step then for a compliance officer, but not a required step.
Right.
All right. So that's the step for validating a representative, a third party, as a reasonably necessary representative. Even if somebody, Taylor, is designated as quote unquote authorized, notwithstanding my comments about the National Labor Relations Act, and maybe the COSHA has at least satisfied themselves that this third party is reasonably necessary to the prosecution of a physical inspection. Is there still an opportunity for an employer to deny access to the worksite to that third party?
Yeah, there is. This is spelled out in the rule and in the FAQ. So essentially what OSHA says is that the conduct of this representative needs to be, you know, can't interfere with a fair and orderly inspection. They give some examples. You can't prevent the compliance officer from interviewing employees in private, for example, is one. You know, and failing to stay with the inspector during the walk around, you know, wandering or going into unauthorized areas, you know, sort of examples of behavior where the employer could say that this is enough and the representative could be denied access.
Yeah, and that's theoretically something that could happen. I mean, this is what those comments we were talking about earlier were referring to, were imagining as possible when they were talking about weaponizing this rule against the employer. So the employer does have some rights to restrict movement, and they arguably have some similar rights, even with respect to the compliance officer,
right,
to restrict movement, to confine them to the movements that are consonant with the purpose of the stated purpose of the inspection. Okay. So in addition, I'd say it's safe to say that the employer has the right to limit access, Taylor, to parts of the worksite that may be protected under trade secrets. And that there's a lot of companies we work with that have sections or large fractions of their workplace that are protected by trade secrets. I'd also say that we work here in the Washington area in particular, we work with a lot of employers that have secured facilities or secret clearance requirements for access to facilities. And an employer certainly has a right to apply that rule uniformly,
right,
with respect to restricted access areas.
Yep, that's right. And then just again, as always, like we say with these OSHA inspections, that the employer has the right to prevent the unreasonable disruption of their normal daily operations. Another thing to keep in mind.
Well, Taylor, in our remaining time together, let's talk about what employers should do in light of this new rule.
Yeah. So there's a lot here. I think the first, you know, right out of the gate is to just verify that this third party representative has indeed been authorized by more than one employee before you even, you know, let them get their foot in the door.
So if you, listening to the OSHA 3030, are faced with a physical inspection by OSHA and a third party seeks to enter, or an employee seeks to have a third party enter the premises and accompany the inspection, or the compliance officer seeks to have a third party accompany them, validate that the third party is indeed authorized by the employees.
Exactly.
And in addition, validate that the compliance officer has provided that third party with sufficient instruction as to what are the bounds of appropriate conversation with employees,
right,
that they should be in furtherance of the physical inspection and not. Maybe, for example, if it was a union rep, for unionization purposes, that would be one example of off-limits conduct.
Right.
I think, in addition, get the compliance officer to expressly identify what the, quote, positive contribution, end quote, would be from that third party during the physical inspection, and why. What are the qualifications of that third party? What are their areas of expertise, for example, that would, A, make them somebody who could make a positive contribution, and B, that positive contribution be something that's actually reasonably necessary to the furtherance of the inspection itself.
Yeah, I would, like you say, I would bifurcate those, because they're not the same thing. And so what's the positive contribution, and then how is it necessary? Making the COSHA articulate those, I think, is
sure.
And then so apply normal visitor policies to this third-party representative. So this is something we say all the time in context to complying it to the COSHA, but to the third-party representative. So if there's areas that can't be accessed due to trade secrets, if there's PPE that you make normal visitors wear, you know, to just go through all these steps as if they were a normal visitor on the work site.
Yeah, that's right. I would say that many workplaces that I visited around the country, as their OSHA counsel, they have orientation for visitors and basic safety training, wear your bump hat or wear ear protection, et cetera. And if you have that uniformly applied to all visitors, you may administer that orientation as well to compliance officers and to their third-party accompaniment. That does not need to be a rule that you've uniformly applied does not need to be suspended in favor of a third party or even the compliance officer. And the same goes for, as I said before, areas that have security clearance or facilities that have security clearance or background checks necessary in order to gain admittance. Those are the kinds of restrictions that you may also apply to a compliance officer or to a third party accompaniment to that compliance officer.
That's right. So another one, ensure that the inspection is not delayed by more than 1 hour when waiting for this representative. This is actually in the FAQ. OSHA sort of talks about a reasonable time to wait for a representative to show up on site or during the inspection. They give the time of 1 hour. So I would know that and then try to hold them to that during the process.
There's some flexibility that may be reasonable.
Sure.
I would also argue that if that aids an employer in arranging the staffing that they need to accompany the physical inspection, that more time for the employer and for the compliance officer,
right,
may be beneficial for everybody.
Right.
There's always that possibility. So think about the larger picture when considering that frequently asked question provision by OSHA in its FAQs. Finally, I'd say that there, even with this rule, there's only certain aspects of an OSHA inspection that permit the third party, if they're truly authorized and they're truly reasonably necessary, to be present during. One of them is the opening conference.
Right. The next is the walk around inspection. They can be there for that.
The rule really just goes to the physical inspection itself.
Yeah.
And then in the physical, the frequently asked questions, they expand on that to include the opening conference and other elements. But part of the physical inspection does include employee interviews. So there's that part that a third party could theoretically be permitted under this rule, at least facially permitted.
Right. Could be. They do point out, OSHA themselves, that only when asked to be there, though, by the employee themselves, can they participate in that private employee interview.
Right. And then finally, the closing conference. I don't personally see the argument in favor of reasonable necessity here, but that is what OSHA's staking a claim to in its frequently asked questions. Those are the elements of a inspection that OSHA claims a third party could accompany. And that, Taylor, is this month's OSHA 3030, and I think it's a really important one, and we did it in exactly 30 minutes. Thank you all for participating. We will be rebroadcasting this as a podcast. When you get the invitation for this episode or for any other episode, please remember to circulate the invitation to at least 3 other safety and health professionals or folks in your Office of General Counsel who are responsible for regulatory compliance, including OSHA law compliance, either your EHS in-house counsel or your employment law in-house counsel or your general counsel themselves, so that they know about the program and can stay up to date on this fast-changing area of law. After all, we've had a new and fresh and important topic every single month for 10 years. So this is a developing area of law, OSHA law, and it's important to stay up to date. And the OSHA 3030 is a perfect way for friends and clients of the Keller and Heckman community to do so. So please forward on your invitations to make sure you spread the good word about the program. We're also, Taylor and I are both on LinkedIn. Send an invite or a link request on LinkedIn. Make sure you link in with both of us so we can always stay in touch in between programs. This will be recorded as a podcast. Our next episode will be May 22, 2024 at 1 p.m. Eastern Time. And we have sister programs. If your organization is responsible for compliance with REACH or TSCA, you should know about our sister programs, the REACH 3030. The next episode will be at 10 a.m. Eastern Time on June 12th. And the TSCA 3030 will be at 1 p.m. Eastern Time U.S. on May 8th, 2024. Those are both great programs by some incredibly knowledgeable colleagues of ours here at Keller & Heckman, the REACH 3030 and the TSCA 3030. Taylor Johnson, thank you for joining us in this program. Thank you all in the OSHA 3030 community for participating in one more episode, 10 years and running. And I want to thank the staff here at Keller & Heckman for helping put another program to bed. We're really grateful for everyone who's made this program possible. We look forward to seeing you again next month. And until then, stay safe.